Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, February 15th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. And through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, if you go there and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. On that same page, you can also click a link that will take you to a PDF file. Download it, copy it off, print it, and use it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, because when you start using that tool, it usually creates changes in your life or problems that you need or you would like to get some feedback on. And that's why we're here. We're here to be of service. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you're listening live and you have a comment or a question, you can call that number and press 1. It'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. If you're listening at some time when we're not live, you're listening through the archives, you can also click links on that page and download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or asked clarifying questions about the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how that process has improved their life and relationships. So, this year, beginning January 10th, we began working through the Way of Mastery. And we're working through it very slowly, methodically. I'm reading it and giving commentary. And thanks to one of our listeners yesterday, making the suggestion that I get a little bit more clear about when I'm reading verbatim from the Way of Mastery and when I've taken off on a commentary, I will see how that goes, having taken that input in then. And my plan for today, if I didn't have anybody raise a hand at the beginning of the show and ask a question, my plan is to go back and begin again at Lesson 3. Lesson 3 is a pivotal lesson for me. It's what allowed me to think it was valid to introduce the Way of Mastery to the Mindshifter support groups and the Mindshifter radio show because of the definition for forgiveness in this work that, to my eye and ear, is exactly the same as the definition for forgiveness that Dr. Michael Rice has found in the Kabbalist manuscript, which is the oldest known copy of the New Testament that at one point was being translated directly from the ancient Aramaic into English, and it will be again when money becomes available. But it's being done in such a way that they had a team of scholars who knew the ancient Aramaic, and they would take a segment of the book and everybody go off on their own and translate it, and then they would come back together and discuss what they believed the translations were. And in order for one of those translations slash interpretations to get accepted into their final product, it had to satisfy at least two requirements. The first one was they had to agree, this team of scholars had to agree that this was a valid translation of the words and the idioms of the time. And the second piece was it had to align perfectly with the loving message of everything else that they were translating, because the message from the master teachers back then was allowance, surrender, love, acceptance, compassion, gratitude, appreciation. These are the vibrational frequencies that are in alignment with everything getting better in life, everything in life being experienced in a way where we can grow through it. So the definition that they came up with for forgiveness from that work is, since the word in the ancient Aramaic, which was translated into something in Greek and something in Latin and something in English, eventually landing as forgiveness in the English language, that definition carried with it the Greek meaning for the word pardoning, which means we see somebody do something very wrong, we all know it's wrong, we know they should be punished according to the laws, or the what's the word for law? The rules of the culture, and yet we're going to pardon them. We're going to say you don't have to undergo the punishment. We're going to be the bigger person. But in the ancient Aramaic, the word that was translated all those different ways and landed as forgiveness had nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook. That word was shebag, which meant to cancel, to put down, to dismantle that which in me is off the mark. So whether it's a negative thought, whether it's a traumatic energy, whether it's a negative emotion that gets generated by pouring so much mind energy into a negative thought pattern, the word shebag, the word means cancel, dismantle, put down the energies in me that don't belong there. Michael Rice was working with that work. He had also worked extensively with The Course in Miracles. And The Course in Miracles has a part where it says, open a curtain in your practice. Put aside what you think you want. Your trifling treasures put away. And leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come. And eventually it clicked in for Dr. Michael Rice. Oh my gosh, that's the same as canceling, dismantling, putting down my goals, my desires, everything I think I want. That's putting the conscious logical mind on the shelf for now and asking to be shown something else. So as he talks about it, he says there's only two places on the planet that he's found the same definition for forgiveness, which is to cancel, shebag, dismantle, put aside what you want and ask to be shown something else whenever there's upset in your life, in your mind, in your heart, in your emotions. That's why when I hit lesson 3 in the Way of Mastery, I said, oh my gosh, this is the same definition. Lesson 3 says, to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is therefore an act of forgiving one's self of one's projections. As you begin to forgive, even 70 times, 7 times, each time you forgive, you take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. You begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships through the simple act of not being aware of the power of projection. Now that time when I read it, I'm reading it verbatim. To forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. To release another from my thoughts about them. Now, it goes on to say, it is therefore an act of forgiving oneself of one's projections. When I read this, I often change the words to clarify the meaning. It is therefore an act of dismantling one's projections, which are false. Dismantling a negative perception, because I create my perception inside my mind-body energy system. And as soon as I read that and the rest of lesson 3, I realized, oh my gosh, this is the same awareness that I'm creating my own experience of life, because the first 2 lessons, that's almost all they're really talking about. The first 2 lessons are a wake-up call to wake up any Western mind to the fact that we have been conditioned to believe we're victims of life and the people around us, when in fact, the first axiom states, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. So the first 2 lessons in the Way of Mastery summarize that work by saying, quote, I have literally created this experience that I'm in the middle of. Something within me in this moment is so grand, so powerful, so vast, so beyond anything that scientists have ever come up with, that I have literally crystallized into the field of experience an awareness of being in the body in time and space. It's come from the field of my consciousness, and this is a gift from the Creator, who asks only that I learn to create as creation does. So everything I experience is my own creation. Therefore, if I experience an anger as my mind shows me pictures of one of my brothers or sisters, which is any other human being that I encounter, I'm the one creating that picture, I'm the one creating the negative interpretation of it, and I'm the one creating the emotion I'm experiencing. And when I hit that part of lesson 3 and I went through it and read that lesson probably literally dozens of times before moving on, I realized it was completely compatible with the teachings of the Kabor's manuscript and the teachings of A Course in Miracles, and therefore it was completely compatible in my mind with the Mind Shifters support groups and the Mind Shifters. Eventually it became the Mind Shifters internet show. So that's what brought us here. That's why we're working through the Way of Mastery. And lesson 3 is titled The Power of Forgiveness. And lesson three begins with two paragraphs that I often use as a way of helping people understand what I mean when I say, I think the way of mastery is a kinder, gentler form of A Course in Miracles. Not better than, not substantially different than, but a different form of the same kind of a message. And I will read with only slight variations around the use of the word love. I will read those first two paragraphs. If I search the languages of your world, I cannot find the words that can convey the love that I feel for you. I cannot find the words that can convey unto you the love that God has for all of us. I cannot find a concept, a word, an idea, a philosophy, or a dogma that can contain the mystery that is closer to you than your own breath and awaits your discovery. If I search throughout all of creation, if I search through the many mansions that exist within the domains of our Father's creation, and that creation is infinite, try as I might, I cannot discover anything that can truly describe you. I cannot find anything that is of greater value than you. In truth, I cannot discover anything that speaks more eloquently of the love that God is than your very existence. Therefore, in truth, I look upon you constantly and marvel at the radiance of my Father's love. It is through you that I come to discover all that God is. It is through you that I come to discover all that the creation is. You are the extension of the creative energy manifesting in form. This is commentary. This is not from the text. You are, and everyone you look at, everything you see, is a result of the creative energy extending in form, expressing in form, since the beginning of material existence. There's a wonderful spiritual teacher, his name is Michael Singer, and he did a whole 8-session series about learning to live from a place of surrender. And in it, he spends 45 or 55 minutes just talking about how our current science puts the beginning of physical material things, the Big Bang, puts that at about 13.84 billion years ago. Prior to that, there is the assumption there was no physical material thing, that there was this essence of something, energy, consciousness, whatever, that exploded and gave rise to particles, and those particles were beyond comprehension in how many of them there were, and they started forming attractions to each other in these massive dust clouds, and as those clouds got bigger, they created gravity, and then they actually collapsed into suns, creating fusion, and then those suns would expand and explode, and they would meld elements together, and so all of the elements, hydrogen, carbon, everything that your world, your body, and everyone that you look at and everything that you see is made up of these atoms that began 13.84 billion years ago. And then as suns exploded and collapsed and grew and exploded and collapsed and grew, they started giving rise to all of the elements in our periodic table of elements. And then on some planets like ours, life was born. Was it born because some God hand initiated life, or did it evolve? It's irrelevant. But the point is, everything that you see, every person that you interact with, is carrying around a body that's made up of the same atoms and molecules that came from the nothingness that was before the Big Bang and the Big Bang. So here's the creative process unfolding for 13.84 billion years, and it's given rise to the room you're sitting in, or the car you're driving in, or the ears that you're listening to this with. And he suggests that we just take a look at how silly it is for us with our conscious logical mind to evaluate how our lives are unfolding and judge it as bad or wrong when it took 13.84 billion years of the flow of creation for it to come into being. You are a part of that extension of the creative energy expressing in form. And so is everyone around you. And the point of these first two paragraphs is to wake us up to that exquisite truth of our lives. The third paragraph on this page says, "When I walked upon your earth as a man, I began to realize that the greatest gift I could ever receive." Think about this. It says, "I began to realize that the greatest gift I could ever receive would only come to me if I chose to surrender every perception." Every perception that I might conjure up about you, my brother or sister, that would veil the truth that is true about you always. So this isn't the, he doesn't say this is the best blessing I could ever give you. The best gift I could ever give you is to see you as the energy of creation expressing in form. It says the best gift I could ever receive can only come to me if I choose to surrender every perception that I might conjure up about any of my brothers and sisters. Fascinating. Just amazing. Now, to continue the commentary, we have been suggesting take a look at some videos by Anil Seth and others that study perception. And they're telling us pretty much the opposite of what most of us have believed most of our lives. Perception is an 100% active process. This is why we can have five people watch the same interaction in real life or on a screen or and come away with five or more different interpretations of what happened. Perception is an active process. What he's saying in this paragraph is that my perception steals from me the greatest gift I could ever receive. Whenever I create a perception that has me thinking you are anything other than the creative energy expressing in form, creation itself unfolding in front of me, a miracle of life, something that speaks more eloquently of the love that creation is than anything else, something that could help me see the radiance of creation's love and learn about creation itself by being in direct interaction with you without my perceptions being in the way. The fourth paragraph says, when I was 9 years of age, I began to awaken to exactly what I'm describing to you. As my father would take me to sit with the elders, and as he would read from the Torah to me, I began to be compelled by something within. Something began to speak to me that underneath all of the perceptions that I could create of another, there was something radiant and shimmering waiting to be discovered. So again, into commentary, he says, I began to awaken to the fact that there was something radiant and shimmering underneath any pictures my mind created about the life around me. Underneath all of the perceptions that I could create about myself, about the brothers and sisters around me, about the people around me, underneath it all, there was something radiant and shimmering waiting to be discovered. And if I, this is the commentary, he's basically saying, if I use my process of perception and come up with anything other than blissful connection to the energy around me, I'm hiding from myself. I'm stealing from myself the greatest gift I could ever receive, and I'm hiding from myself the truth of life unfolding in, through, as, and around me in the moment. So back again to the fourth paragraph, and I'm just going to read it again verbatim. When I was 9 years of age, I began to awaken to exactly what I'm describing to you. As my father would take me to sit with the elders, and as he would read from the Torah to me, I began to be compelled by something within. Something began to speak to me that underneath all of the perceptions that I could create of another, there was something radiant and shimmering waiting to be discovered. The next paragraph says, I began to feel very different from my peers. I began to be preoccupied with inner things. When I listened to the elders speak, I would often feel as though I had drifted far away from where they were. Pictures would come to me, thoughts would come to me, and feelings would come to me that I did not understand, that I had not assimilated into my being. But something began to compel me. How might I discover how to see only that shimmering radiance? Would it be possible for me to see my brothers and sisters as my father, as creation, sees its children? I discovered that the way to see with the eyes of Christ begins with the acceptance that I, as a creator, created in the image of God or the creator itself, I literally choose every experience and I call it to me. That I create the veils through which I view creation. So, the commentary is, I create my experience. The first two lessons simply talk about, I create my experience. The third lesson says, guess what? I woke up and I realized there's a shimmering radiance behind the pictures that my mind shows me about a tree, a rabbit, a squirrel, a leaf, a stream, the rain, a person walking out around outside of me, me. There's a shimmering radiance. There's the energy of creation itself that that I hide from myself when I perceive a simple physical body. Or I say, oh, that's a tree. And I try to encapsulate my experience of that flowing energy in the word tree and all of the memories and associations I have in my head about the word tree. And I began to awaken, he says, I began to awaken to the fact that I'm the one stealing from myself the greatest gift I could possibly have every time my mind creates an experience that's less than love, that's less than joy, that's less than bliss. Because I'm the one that's creating the veils that obstruct my view, that prevent me from seeing the shimmering radiance that underlies everything that my mind shows me as a physical structure, whether it's a person or a desk or a lamp or a tree or a car. So, that last paragraph again reads, but something began to compel me. Something began to get me to ask the question, how might I discover how to see only that shimmering radiance? Something began to compel me to ask, would it be possible for me to see my brothers and sisters, in other words, every other human being, as the Creator sees all of us, its offspring? The words in the book are, would it be possible for me to see my brothers and sisters as my Father sees his children? I discovered that the way to see with the eyes of Christ begins with the acceptance that I, as a creator, created in the image of the Creator, I literally choose every experience and call it to me, which means I create the veils that obstruct my view, that keep me from seeing the shimmering radiance that underlies every aspect of creation and every person. I create the veils through which I view creation. The book goes on to say, I began to shift my perspective slightly. And I began to be seen as someone who was rebelling against the teachings of my Essene elders. For I began to move away from striving for God and striving for perfection, and I began to cultivate within myself the process of allowing. Allow, embrace, trust, accept, surrender to, and therefore transcend all. So the paragraph again says, I began to shift my perspective just slightly, and I began to be seen as someone who was rebelling against the teaching of my Essene elders, for I began to move away from striving for God and striving for perfection, and I began to cultivate within myself the process of allowing. The next paragraph says, I discovered that if I looked upon my perceptions, my feelings, my behavior, exactly as they were, without overshadowing them with my own interpretations, if I could teach myself to embrace things with innocence, veils began to be dissolved from my mind. For when I was 9 years old, I had already learned to be fearful of thinking, speaking, or acting in a way that was not in conformity to the prevailing wisdom of that time, even within the Essene community, which had become rather rigidified. There was already much dogma, and dogma always leads to bickering. I began to discover that if I looked with innocence upon all things, a light began to shine through the things I was looking at. And as I rested more and more in this innocence, more and more the light would shine. As I grew in age, I discovered that the old teachers who spoke of the need to, quote, forgive 70 times 7, close quotes, they knew something quite profound that had even become lost within the Jewish and Essene traditions of my day. Now we're back to where we began. Before I started reading, I quoted from this paragraph. For to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is therefore an act of forgiving one's self of one's projections. As you begin to forgive 70 times, 7 times, each time you forgive, you take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. You begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships through the simple act of not being aware of the power of projection. So I'm going to stop reading there and just talk a little bit about that last paragraph and what was leading up to it. In that paragraph, they're saying the meaning of the word forgive is to release myself from the perceptions I have been projecting onto others and releasing them from any identification within my mind that they need to conform to any expectations that my perceptions would lead me to generate. Again, the whole first two lessons, you are creating your experience in life. Nothing happens to you that you experience any other way than you choose to experience. Things happen. There's this flow of life energy, 13.84 billion years. People can come up to you and insult you. They can slap you. They can punch you in the jaw and break your jaw. They can steal your stereo or some other, you know, prized possession that you have. Those things happen. And the first two lessons bring us into the potential to observe that when that happens, we create our experience of that movement of the creative energy. We can generate compassion or we can generate rage. We can generate hurt or we can generate allowance. We can generate acceptance or we can generate judgment. The whole first two lessons, all about how we create our experience. The third lesson says, now let's get a little bit more specific. We create our experience. And part of the way we do that is we form perceptions. Each of us has the freedom to create and form their own perceptions in each new present moment. And where they choose to focus their conscious awareness and the interpretation they put on the flow of events around them is what creates their experience of life in the moment. One of the dynamics that we are not taught is that when we are in denial of the fact that we are creating the images that show up in our minds, the thoughts that go with them, and the emotions that get generated if we pour enough mind energy into those thoughts, when we are in denial of the fact that we are creating that, our mind shows us pictures that project our upset onto our image of other people. And so in our own minds, we project our issues onto other people, and we come to believe they are the ones that caused our upset. And the last line that I read, from that paragraph on page 25 of The Way of Mastery. It's the seventh paragraph down. The last line says, the more you do this process of dismantling your perceptions, the more you begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships. How did you color and therefore affect all of your relationships? You have not been aware of the power of projection. You color and affect all of your relationships because everything that you think and feel about another person is completely self-created. A little bit later on, it'll talk about how in every moment we have the opportunity to choose to teach only love, to choose only interpretations that will help us generate gratitude, appreciation, respect, trust, allowance, surrender. We could choose those interpretations. We could choose to see actions coming out of our fellow human beings that we see, we can discern, this is in anger, this is from pain and fear and sadness, this is, you know, someone hurling an insult, this is someone taking a property that doesn't belong to them. We could see every one of those through the lens that says, oh, this is a cry for help and healing from another being of brilliance and light who's exactly like me, and I'm going to respond in a way that sends an awareness of our true nature resonating out into the field. I'm going to send that loving energy that I'm made of and they're made of. I'm going to strengthen it in my awareness. I'm going to see them in the image. This is like Pierre Pradervan's Gentle Art of Blessing. I'm going to hold an image in my heart and my mind of this person living into their highest and best potential. And I'm going to pour my mind energy into that. And I'm going to visualize sending it out to those people. I could choose to do that. And as I do, I begin to awaken to how I have colored every relationship in my life by denying that I'm the one that's creating my experience and my perceptions and my emotions and blaming others for creating upset in me or creating anger in me or creating sadness or hurt or confusion in me. Breathing into this, understanding the core of the first two lessons is very clear. You're creating your experience of life in each new present moment by how you choose and where you choose to focus your conscious awareness. Nothing else creates your experience of life. The third lesson says, let's get a little bit more specific. Let's talk about denial of the first two axioms. And the first two axioms are, you're creating your experience of life. And nothing outside of you is creating that experience. So denial of that instantly creates projection in which your mind will show you pictures and try to convince you that the pictures in your mind are the same as the people and things outside of you. And the pictures in your mind will be arranged in such a way as to give you the rationalization to blame people and things outside of you for what you're feeling. It begins with denial of the first axiom, that nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. The more I deny the truth of my power of creating my experience, the more my mind automatically within each heartbeat, before each breath, creates images that are specifically designed to convince me of the rationalization that someone else outside of me is causing my upset. So, I will leave it there for now. We are on page 25 at the seventh paragraph that starts with, "For to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions we have been projecting upon them." And I'll breathe and take a drink and ask if anybody has any comments or questions. 563-999-3581 is our call-in number. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can I support you today? We have 12 minutes or so left to get comments, questions, reactions, refutations. Today is a Tuesday, so we will be having a support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. All the information needed to join us there is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. If you go there or you direct someone else to go there, please remember that there are two separate pages. And one is for Tuesday's login information, and the other is for Thursday's login information. Somebody just sent me the comment that we are projecting constantly and that this way of mastery writing is catapulting us into observing. And that's exactly what we're being asked to do. We're being asked to notice how this process of perception, which is constantly on and active, is creating our experience of life, and nothing outside of us is doing that. And our culture teaches us that these outside events are responsible for my reaction and my emotions, and so it is instantaneously projecting. And when we slow down and observe our own process, then we can, you know, we can get fancy and we can go to YouTube and type in, you know, the words perception and hallucinating perception and creating your own perception. And you can learn from our scientists today the same kind of things that comes from ancient wisdom from thousands of years ago. So do whatever you need to start questioning it for yourself and observing for yourself, because there are a few people who will argue that the best way to change something for the better is to first understand how it works. And if you start changing things and working at changing things before you actually have observed or understand how something works, you generally just create more messes. We are creators of our experience. We are generating our perception. Our perceptions are what generate all of our emotions. And when we don't sit in the moment observing that, an automatic process comes up and starts projecting in our mind images of the people and things around us and creating rationalizations. It's been programmed into us for decades for most of us, so we instantly generate rationalizations that, as Guy Finley points out, if we don't steal from ourselves every excuse to be negative, bitter, hurtful, resentful, if we don't steal from ourselves every excuse, we will be able to rationalize any level of abuse. And all of these great spiritual teachings are about helping us dismantle any excuse for being abusive, for being negative, for being anything to anyone else that we would not want them to be to us. The golden rule. So this is a call to begin to live your life from observation. If you put the filter on it, you'll start to see this book, The Way of Mastery, this set of teachings from the Christ Mind teachings, is calling you to observe over and over and over again, more and more, day to day, moment to moment in your own life, what's actually happening. And observe that with childlike innocence and playfulness. Notice the tendency to beat yourself up and judge yourself negatively, and just notice it. Breathe, soften, chuckle a little bit, and let it go. Release your attachment to being right about it. Release any tendency that's been programmed into you to beat yourself or somebody else up when they aren't acting in a way, or you're not acting in the way that you think you should. As we do that, as we step back, as we question, as we allow, as we embrace, as we trust, as we surrender, we start to notice an entirely different way of being in the world that's not being directed by the world, that's not being driven by the mental, emotional conditioning, the intellectual garbage can that, you know, the garbage that's been shoved into our intellect through decades of conditioning. And it's, you know, it's the conditioning that's offered by the culture, by our families, by our friends, by our neighbors. It's the best they have to offer. No reason to get upset about it. For 45 plus years, including a training for a doctorate in clinical psychology, almost everything about my life was filled with statements that fit: you made me angry, you hurt my feelings, you upset me, you scared me, that's wonderful, that's tragic. As though what someone said or did or the outside event was causing my emotions. I actually got the, I was trained as a clinical psychologist, and I have vivid memories of professors sitting with me, coaching me to ask my clients, how did that make you feel when he said that? How did it make you feel when she came home late? How did it make you feel when you found out X, Y, or Z? And it wasn't until 45 years of my life, including that training, that somebody came along and said, now, can we slow this down and just start to question this a little bit? Because, yes, you can build a thought system that says somebody else is making you angry. But you can also step back and realize, you know what, within the last year, 17 or 18 different people have done the very same thing, and you just brushed it off without getting angry. So it must be that the anger is not being created by someone saying those words or doing those actions, because you've heard those words and seen those actions dozens of times in your life and not responded with deep hurt or rage or fear or sadness. Can we slow it down and just observe? And the more we do that, the more we see, you know what? When I choose an interpretation and place it on these words or these actions, that's what I use to generate my negative emotional response. It's not the words or the actions. It's the filter that I choose and apply to those. It's the meaning that I create and then pour my mind energy into that creates my response and creates my emotions. Wow, that's fascinating. I have hundreds, maybe thousands of examples that flood into my mind when I give a talk like this. I remember I've had people call me horrible names, and I just kind of chuckle and walk away because the person was a homeless person, or the person was somebody who was half my size who wanted to goad me into a fight, and I didn't want to be goaded. I didn't want to, you know, get arrested for battery. I specifically remember one time at a football game, we were just leaving to go get something at halftime, and a guy took both his hands and popped me in the chest, which if I'd been half my size, it would have sent me tumbling, you know, down the rafters or whatever. And I just looked at him and said, "Really?" And I had to look down to look in his face. And then I just kept going. Well, I've seen people erupt into fistfights over that kind of thing. I've seen people use some activity or action from someone outside of them as an excuse for throwing a punch, hurling a chair, bringing out a knife and threatening. When we can wake up to just slow down enough to see, what is our process of creating perception? What it is we're doing that gives the meaning to these life events that we then say we're responding to? When we do that, we create a liberty for ourselves. We create options for ourselves that don't exist until we do that. If I live from belief, if I live from dogma, if I live from reaction to do again things I've already done before, I imprison myself. I create a sense of being locked in, of being controlled. I am not locked in. I am not controlled, but I can create the sense that I am. I can create the perception that I have no choice. And that's what we're getting told to do in this third lesson, is to start to slow down. We're being given an example of somebody that began to do this as early as age 9, that began to realize that as he slowed down and questioned, he got to see how it was the perceptions he was creating that hid from him the glory of life expressing in, through, as, and around him, and in, through, as, and around every person he interacted with. It's my perceptions that hide from me the truth of life. It's my perceptions that create all the negative emotions that I generate. And I have the ability to choose differently every time I create an emotion that's less than love. So we'll pick it up here again tomorrow. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice. Are you there, Jeannie?
I guess if I unmute myself, it would help, huh?
Yep.
Thank you,
Dr. Kim.
Probably
got a couple different levels of unmuting to do. So have
right.
A wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is, what is today? Today is Tuesday, February the 15th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And while Michael's getting dialed in, I'll invite you to go to the website, which is whyagain.org. And I don't know why it just gave me an error message there, but go to whyagain.org, and you can click on the Start Here button in the upper left corner, and it will take you to where all of their worksheets are listed. It's broken down. I changed that page just a little bit, so it's a little more ease in navigating. The first big square is a poster to download on the factors that create perception, and then it says to listen to the reading of Chapter 24 and watch the PowerPoint presentation, and then begin with and stick to the worksheet until you've accomplished it, and then you can progressively move on up to the more complex worksheets. But then you'll see different sections where there is actually the link for Chapter 24. There's the link for the PowerPoint, all the things that were mentioned in that first paragraph, and then there's a link to all of the reality management wake-up sheets, and there's many versions of them in there, including the children's versions, the abbreviated version, the current 7-step, all the way up to the one that we use in the teacher's training, the 12 steps. And so you can access all those there, and then underneath it is a link that says special MP3s of shows on the wake-up sheets. And then under that it says all other worksheets, commitments, posters, they're listed alphabetically. Everything besides the reality management wake-up sheet. And then there's other things like the app and so forth all the way down. So there's lots of information. Hopefully it's in a easier format for you to follow. And I'll welcome Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here. And, sweetie, you had come in this morning with an exciting download that you'd gotten that we'd been talking about. So if you'd share that, I'd love to have everybody hear it. I think it's just really, you know, for several years I've talked about why we do this show and that it's a way to stay engaged in the work. Well, you just came up with a download that that gives a real explanation for that. So if you'd share it.
Oh, sure. So it was not a dream. It was more like just something that I was told. And it was talking about, you know, if, especially referring to animals, but then it flipped and applied to people, but that, you know, if you had an animal and you put it in a certain size, it was limited in its habitation, limited in the amount of nutrition it could get or whatever, that it would slow its growth. And so then what I got out of that was, even as humans or non-humans, that if we limit the amount of feeding that we give to even our spiritual, whether it's, you know, physical, spiritual, mental, whatever, and we limit the amount of food that we give it and we put ourselves in a box, that we are actually going to limit the amount of our growth. And so I started doing Google searches on it, too, and it's referred to several different things. In one place, it was called an indeterminate growth, and that even refers to some plants, and that the growth of the person, animal, plant, whatever, would be not just a sole factor of the size of the habitat, but the available food supply and other biological needs. And then another one, it was called adaptation, and that's actually also what Charles Darwin, and I said, you know, I don't really like him. I had to study him in college, but he was right on this theory that individuals will develop certain traits that enable them to adapt for survival, and that they pass that trait on if they have offspring, that they pass that on to their offspring. And they inherit those same traits, in that it's kind of where he got the evolution theory or whatever, that we will evolve over time in order to survive. And so if we think about it in regards to like this work, you know, if we put ourselves in a box and we don't want to look at the fears and the angers and the hostilities and the griefs and all those things, and we put ourselves in this box thinking that we're keeping ourselves safe, we're actually limiting ourselves as to how much we can grow. And then in another section, it even talked about the fetus. You know, there's a concept or a thing that happens if the fetus doesn't have enough space to develop and grow, and that things will shift and that even organs will fail and different things like that. So, and that these traits of the need to survive, to adapt to a certain way in order to survive, that it is passed on genetically, and it's actually encoded in the genes that certain traits have to be passed on in order for that species to replicate or to exist or to continue. And so, I mean, like, I still don't have all of it yet, but that's kind of in a nutshell what I was given this morning. And it's like, whoa, this is too big right now for my brain to hold. So I've got to take it a little bit at a time, but it was pretty awesome.
Well, the first thought that I have, Jeannie, is to recognize, you remember the definition that Yeshua had given us for this feminine elemental force in us, it was called Ruka Dukuja, was that she who would undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. And notice how many layers of undoing you've been doing. And my offering is it's cleared your mind to be able to listen and literally hear. And a lot of people, you know, if you're hearing a voice, there's something wrong with you. No, actually, there is a direct, distinct guide that exists within us if we're available to listen and if we're not stuck in one of those adaptions.
Oh, it's really not coincidental, but it's that you said that. I didn't share this the other day when you breathed me. You know, I have for several years now had the ringing in the ears, you know, whatever they call it. And but it, when you were breathing me the other day, it was like really loud. And I was like, okay, you can quiet down. You don't have to be so loud. I'm ready to listen. So it's wild that you just said that.
Interesting. Well, I talked to Dr. John Lawrence, the fellow that I'm meeting out in California next week to do some medical work. And he was sharing that he got a download that the ringing in the ears and tinnitus is actually the current, the sound of love. Of love present, that's what it is. You know, I don't know what to do with that at this point, but that was his take. That was a direct download that he got and was looking into and working with. It's something in his clinic that he works with specifically with people to eradicate. He does lasers and all kinds of neat stuff to help with tinnitus. But that was just a totally new piece for him. So interesting you bring it up, and he just brought it up in my conversation with him yesterday.
It's pretty cool.
So who knows where all this is going? Yeah. And, you know, if you look at in their laws of living work, we get into the work of Dr. Hans Selye, a Canadian physician who really brought the whole idea of stress forward into the world. And he talks about what he calls the general adaptation syndrome, and that once we are under a certain level of stress, the whole organism will start to adapt and change its structure and its function in order to deal with those levels of stress. And that when adaption doesn't work, then the organism goes into adaption failure, which you just described with organ failures and such. And the end result of that is death. And all the aberrant behaviors in our culture, from criminality to overeating to, you know, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, they're all adaptation syndromes. They're all ways of adapting to stress. And when stress is managed properly, a la forgiveness, first century Aramaic forgiveness, then all of those things just disappear because they're adaptions to unmanageable stress. And
There was another part, too, that if they didn't adapt and didn't change in order to be able to survive in their space or their, you know, amount of nutrition or whatever, the ones that did not adapt actually became distorted in order to fit within the container.
Right. Yeah, and that's interesting how you came up with that, and that just goes full circle to the download I got last week with Ari Rain, and recognizing that our job as parents, grandparents, what have you, is not to hold or to structure a container for them to fit into and a mold for them to express through, but rather our job is to recognize them as created whole, and through holding a space of active love to allow them to structure the container called their lives as a reflection of who they are. And that in order for us to be able to do that, and this talks about, this fits with the whole, you know, these adaptions are passed on from generation to generation, that, you know, if we have, you know, dings and bangs and misformations in the molds we were poured into, if that's what happened to us, in order to be able to be that space for the child, we have to bang all of those things out. We have to clean all of those things out ourselves. And that's the only way we can really hear and be with the guidance that will take us to the highest space for holding a space for them. And of course, as I said, the reason we're doing this show is so that people can continue in a conversation that isn't very common in the culture, to really explore and expand awareness. And, you know, as you come forward with that download, it's like, there's the whole reason. If you're, and sadly, in many cases, churchianity has put our spiritual selves in a box that limits and distorts and perverts who we are, or at least, pardon me, not who we are, you can't touch that, but the expression of who we are. And when we knock out all the dings and the bangs and the, you know, the craziness, when we forgive, when we remove those things, then we come into the world fully. We incarnate as who we actually are, and everything changes, you know, everything changes. So why take the time to listen to this show every day? Because you're engaging in a conversation that educates, that feeds, that nurtures. You know, as Jeannie said, if the food supply is limited, then there's a restriction in the growth of the animal, in the expression of the animal. And if the food supply, which is spiritual nutrition, is prohibited to the individual, if they're given, you know, the pablum or the insanity of fear and rage and a punishing God, and that's what's fed to their spiritual selves, it's just like that box that, you know, leaves people distorted. And it's time for us to wake up and hammer out, forgive all the dings, all the aberrations, and return to the truth of who we are. And one of the ways of doing that is to stay engaged in a conversation that is educational about the truth of who we are as human beings. So nice download, sweetie. Thanks for sharing it with me, with us.
Absolutely.
Yay. Well, any other thoughts for you? Or if there's anybody out there in listener land, push one.
Yeah. Somebody push one. Let's talk.
You started to say you just...
There's just so much more that I need to grasp onto to fully understand what I was told. And this morning has been a little bit on the wild side and haven't had time to really sit with it. But I definitely will do that, and I'll report back. And we did have a hand just go up.
Great. Awesome.
And I believe...
Go for it.
I believe that it is Miss Jean, area code 331. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Well, hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I've got a couple of things. And the first one is I was... at a lab bringing in a specimen, and
right.
the woman had a little edge to her, rough edge. I was not feeling well. And when that happens, my voice is just not good at all.
Right. And sounding pretty good right now.
Oh, it doesn't feel so good, but I bit the bullet and pressed one.
Glad you did.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
We'd love to hear from you.
Well, I love your support. Some of the things she said, I was very vulnerable to. And I found myself getting madder and more emotional. And just when I was about to explode, I heard the words, "This is about you. This is about you."
Nice.
And your reaction. I'm telling
you. What a gift.
I'm sure my mouth dropped open. I mean, it was like, what? And it was like a cement block just broke open. It was years of doing this work. And like you say, critical mass. And it was freedom. It was creativity. It was, how can I support this woman? What? I mean, normally I would get angry or tears would come. And when I walked out of there, I was like on a cloud. It was huge.
Nice piece of work. That's awesome.
I know. In my wildest dreams, I did not anticipate it going like that. You know, I'm looking for rainbows and butterflies. And
right.
None of that was there. It was just this amazing awareness that, oh, my gosh, I'm in charge of my life, my emotions.
Right.
And it's my choice. I didn't know that.
Well, and remember that.
Go ahead.
Remember that the mind is a decision-making machine, and so we tend to call its decisions choices, but they're really not. It's just a reaction. It's just what's in there plays out. Where choice comes in is when you do what you just did, when you're listening to that, to Rukka being taught. This is about you, and you make a choice to listen to that and do something about it. That's choice. Otherwise, the decision-making machine will just run on and on and on, keep us in the same patterns of 1,000 generations of insanity and blaming everybody else. So your choice was really in your choice to listen, to go, oh, I got it, and then step into. And I can only imagine that probably one of the accompaniments of that type of situation in the past would have been holding your breath. And notice what you did when you breathed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the tools. That's it. That's just right on track, young lady. That's awesome.
It is.
The
so,
world rejoices with you.
Thank you. Thank you. So is the mind the same as the ego, that it's inertia-bound?
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say they're the same. The what we call the mind, and it really isn't a mind, but what we call this, you know, decision-making function that cycles information, is a container that holds all of our past And whatever goals we hold at the moment, like, you know, I want this person maybe to approve of me, and they say something nasty, and so up comes my pain and my file on being disapproved of. When I hold that goal, it recruits from that container, from carbon-based memory, that which shows up, a product of that happening is what we call the ego. It's a false structure reflecting content from the past of who we aren't but thought we were.
Wait a minute. All right. Who we aren't but thought we were.
But thought we were.
And so
notice that for a minute there, you thought you were the hurting, you know, here I am being picked on, whatever all those dynamics were. That's the false self. That would be the ego. And being false, the instant you were guided and you listened to guidance, collapse it, you know, Rukka telling you this is your work. You went into being, into choice, where love is, where breath is, and began the dissolution of that and ended up in heaven, ended up in, you know, this sweet, awesome space of love, the truth of who you are. Mm. And that's the whole idea of the work, is to keep collapsing that false self, that ego self that comes up, the non-being self that pretends that it has choice, but it's got no choices. It just runs on decisions. You know, the example of a decision being, you know, I say to you, don't think about the color of your car, and what happens? Something about the color of your car moves in you. That's resonance. That's decision-making. And that's what this mind is a decision-making machine, and there is no choice in it whatsoever. Where choice lies is in that moment where you decided to listen to your guidance and make a different choice than falling into identification with that pattern of pain.
Mm.
Awesome.
Well, this is a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning,
it's definitely work.
Meaning, you know, we're going back generations, experiences, mine and theirs, and then I come to this point. And I've got to make a decision or not.
Or make a choice.
Mine's already made the decision.
Carbon-based memory's already made the decision. You interrupt the decision-making process by making choices, by bringing in something new, instead of just running the program from the past. You know, if I'm sitting at my computer and I put in what's 2 plus 2, the computer doesn't reason to or choose 4. It's programmed in the computer already. The computer just shoots up what's programmed in it. It's decision. And that's all that carbon-based memory can do. That's all this non-being mind stored in this, you know, multi-generational database called the body-mind unit can do. But the being that we are is where choice resides and where we can choose to do something other than just react. And you look at that word react. How do you redo an act done on a previous occasion? Oh, woe is me. Look what they said about me. Here I go. I'm in my pain. I'm in my trauma. I'm a victim. Let's beat up on them. You know, whatever all those dynamics are. And forgiveness, you know, each time you do the forgiveness process, it's like weakening those decisions, just like shaving off a little bit of the impetus of it, shaving off a little bit of the energy, until when one of those decisions is made, it's so weak that it can't grab your spiritual beingness by the face, but rather your spiritual beingness stays awake and goes, I'm not buying into that. I'm not going to play that game anymore. Choice now arrives.
Yep, that's just the way it was. So maybe a small first step for me would be to change my language. Instead of, I've got a decision to make, I could think, what is my choice?
Exactly. And you've entered a whole new realm of existence when you do that.
Mm-hmm. And that would be an easy first step.
Yes. Well, an easy first step after you've been doing the work for 20 years.
No, no, more than that.
Right.
You can add another decade.
There you go.
Oh, gosh.
And that's what it takes.
And yes, I can see that. I can see that. Well, thank you for that feedback. That was very helpful. One of the other things was in the 90s, I bought a white apron, and when people would come to my house and share a meal or not, friends, loved ones, I would have them sign my apron. And I pulled it out of a drawer, and I thought, oh, I'm going to look at what everyone has written. It's been such a long time. And I'm listening to the show, and I spread open the apron, and I'm reading it like a book, top to bottom, left to right. And I get to the bottom right. And as I read the words, I promise to trust you enough. You were saying those exact words at the exact time on the radio.
I love it. The law of resonance.
Now I know and remember my mouth dropping open. And I was thinking, is this real? And as you were reading it, I was reading it on my apron. I thought, oh, this is one for the books.
Nice.
And thank you for that. And the last thing was, I was thinking about you talking about 9 bits of information.
Right.
And at that same time, the man on the radio said, our attention span now is 9 seconds. And I said, wow, what's the correlation? 9 bits of information, 9 seconds. Now he could have been talking about advertising or I don't know. All I heard was the 9 bits. Will we, in doing our work and clearing the way, I would imagine it would be possible to increase those bits of information. Would you agree?
Run that by me once more.
We access 9 bits of information.
Right.
In doing our work and clearing the way, meaning would we be able to access more than 9 bits?
I don't know that the mechanical mind could access more than the 9 bits, but what we do when we open that space is we access the true mind. You know, in the ancient teachings, it was called the mind of Christ. There's nothing religious about it, but we're designed to function out of a mind of love. And in that mind, I believe we have access to literally all of creation in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not limited by the mechanical device of this, you know, multi-generational database, what we call the perceptual mind, but we enter into a totally and completely different realm, where literally. You know, and who was it? Not remembering who it was, but said that you must get your bloated nothingness out of the way. What forgiveness does is collapses the bloated nothingness, the perceptual constructs of the 9-bit mind, which are all just reflections of the past, decisions made in the past. And when that's out of the way, then you have access to what was called in the theologies, or what's called theology, the mind of Christ, the mind of love, the mind of the Creator directly, where you have access literally to all knowledge available anywhere in the universe.
Wow.
And the 9-bit mind goes, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And, you know,
yeah.
It's like, it's not something you can figure out. It's just something as you do your work, you go, oh, that's what that means. Oh, I got it. Now let me see if I can talk about it. And then, of course, you go back and you hear the words of Yeshua echo, and the disciples are asking question after question. He says, there are so many things I'd like to say to you, but you can't hear them yet.
Yeah.
There's no talking about it, you know. So we can kind of talk around the edge of it, but you can't talk directly to it until that awakening occurs.
Gosh.
And it wasn't a religious thing or a religious journey. It's just about how to live fully as a human being. You know, you go back to this Yeshua, and he says, he doesn't say, I come to bring you doctrine or dogma or religion or theology. He says, I come to bring you life. And this is life, and life is love flowing through a cell. And what I hear you describing in that experience you had was a total flush of love flowing through your cellular structure. That's life. Mm. That's what Yeshua's work is about. And people reduced it to theology. Dogma, doctrine,
man.
Fear, God's going to get you, all that garbage.
Well, I certainly would like to live in that space a lot more.
Well, you got my support, and I join you in it. You might remember a couple of years ago, actually it's about, 3 years or so ago now, I did a poem called Love Restored, and it occurs to share that. And it's a poem that I wrote about the journey to wholeness, and it goes like this. Taste the nature of a newborn. Notice the newborn is not loving you, but is love. Seek ye first. Clearly, the essence, love, of self and others can be touched, but not contained. Cherished, but never captured nor imprisoned to fulfill the dream of what could never be. Lost identity, love, will never be gained from nor possessed through him, her, or them. The trauma of separation from love, self, initiates and drives the infantile desire to possess, control, rage, threaten, and punish. Should pretended love, approval, be perceived as removed? Just observe the child of two. Foolish to think that a surrogate can replace the vanished self-awareness or restore human life, virtues, and the sensibilities buried beneath the noise of generations of pain, self-inflicted disordered thoughts, and unforgiveness. Or pardon me, and unforgiven suffering. Self, love, confined in the cage of demand, distress endured and held breath, fades, drowned out by the whirling cries of 1,000 generations of errant thoughts, whispers, seized and bound in unfulfilled yearning, love only seems to be smothered, dead. In forgiveness, by collapsing pained perception, which is what I just heard you say it did, once again, actual love, compassion, and joy floods awareness. No longer trapped in the mental constructs of pain and inadequacy, the abyss of fear and darkness is dispelled. Immersed, I commence the journey back to the luscious sweetness of my self-love. What seemed lost was never absent. The still, small voice of love, he who has ears, let him hear, has but been obscured through perception, degraded by internally generated fear and or hostility. It is among us still, sleeping under a blanket of distraction, poor nutrition, and unfulfilled desires. I will live again, but not in longing's fulfillment, but in release, in being freed from my mind. The chains of desire bind, but goals loosed soften into pure being that thrives again in freed breath. Love, not an action, but a state of being I can trust, is the essence of who I am. My deepest nature is to live and flourish in the bliss of being. No reasons nor possessions needed. Physiology, designed for my incarnation, now embodies the only true experience of love. Relationship's purpose, to restore me to my birthright of enthusiasm and living in love's ecstasy. All else is born of generational delusions, which are the cause of all disease, lack, and suffering. Concealed, but never changed by the thousand disturbances, traumas, and trances of the world, I, the offspring of love, live shiny and new. The promise of life more abundantly is fulfilled. I was birthed in awareness of my experience as existence as love. When I truly forgive life's overlays, I am freed from a mind's false graven image of self. Mercy and healing enter, and awakened to the truth of who I am, I live as love itself and fulfill the ancient call to reunite as I extend love to all the world. I rise again each day. Truth expressed, light restored, love revealed. You recognize that journey?
That is all of the classes rolled into one poem.
It is. It is. Yep.
That is phenomenal. And I found my mind wandering on several points, and I had to call myself back.
That's why I am as we speak. That's why I am as we speak sending you a text with a copy of it.
Ah, bless your heart. Thank you.
A link to it. And Jeannie, I'll send you a link to it as well.
I actually have already got it in the notes because I had that already on the website.
Jeannie, you are so quick. You just you're just on the ball. Always.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, this has been quite a phone call, and I thank you.
I always appreciate it when you push one and we get to talk. We cherish you a lot, young lady.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I'm getting images of the day that you came back up from the lake. after the big swim. Golly, that's 28, 29 years ago at Heartland.
Oh, that was, that was a very long time. And to share a little bit with your listeners is we had just done, I believe it was breath work. And And my partner was blank. And we were sharing afterwards. And you and I were talking in the class. And he said, all I want to do is jump in the lake. That's all I want to do. And Mike said, well, get in the truck. We'll go do it. And we went down. We both ran down the pier, jumped in the lake, and we came up about the same time. And Mike said, oh, I had my glasses on. And he went diving back down again. And he found them. And what a miracle that was.
I hadn't remembered that, but yeah, that is a miracle because that water was probably 15 feet deep at the bottom, off to the end of the dock.
Yes. And it was, to me, it was like being baptized. What it felt like. It was just, I need to get in the water. I need to get in the water. Yeah, that's interesting. That sticks out in your mind. Yeah. And we came back dripping wet, obviously.
Yes, that's what I was remembering, you coming back up. I mean, like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You're soaking wet.
Yeah, we were. Great memory. Well, I'm done if you're done. Are you done?
All right, young lady. Appreciate you a lot. Blessings.
All right. And you will.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. What fun. What fun, this journey. This journey of healing is so profoundly powerful. And, you know, what Gene just gave us was a taste of going to the next level, the next depth. And as she says, she's been on this path now doing this work for, you know, that event was 29 or 30 years ago at Heartland. And, you know, personally, I developed the work and have been doing the work for about a half a century. And for me, it's really clear that the deepest and most important work that I've done has been in the last 2 years. And still the deeper work has been the last 6 months. So it's a progressive thing when you realize that in your genes, there are 1.6 billion people in just 30 generations, and that you're carrying the adaptions, as Jeannie talked about, of each and every one of those. You know, they're the kinks, the dents that need to be hammered out with forgiveness in order to really fully incarnate who we are. And that poem was written to reflect the journey, what it looks like, you know, in retrospect, looking back on it, what it looks like. And, you know, when they talk about in the ancient teachings, the mind of man is not yet conceived of what lies in store. It's like, you know, whatever the mold is that you've been poured into, if you've been poured into a mold, awareness can't go beyond that until the forgiveness work, until the healing work is done, that knocks those dents and assaults back out, that clears them out, that removes them. So it is a sweet process, and such a blessing to get to participate in it with so many people over the years. What a gift.
And we have a hand up.
Great. Let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Celinda 541. You're on the air.
Yes, it is. You have
welcome, young lady.
Here in Oregon, haven't you? Okay.
We've got your number.
Yeah, right. I noticed. And so I have yours, too, by the way. And so so many things have popped up to reflect on or to share with about download, about Jean's statement about us only have an attention span now of 9 seconds or whatever it was.
Seconds. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will start with Einstein's quote. And here's an Einstein quote that I thought was really apt for what Gene said. I fear the day that technology will surpass our human interaction. The world will have a generation of idiots. By Einstein.
Yeah.
Which I thought.
That's the, the non-human self.
Yeah. I tend to have color the word idiot, so I would have probably substituted infants and diapers.
Right.
Emotional infants and diapers. Yeah, emotional infants and diapers. Okay. Pertaining to Jeannie's download, I also had a download this morning. The other day I read in our little local paper about an Oregon State University research project about how salmon and birds and various species of animals find their way home or go on their migration routes or whatever. And what they've discovered is that in the nose of a salmon or birds or these other species is magnetite. And magnetite aligns them to the magnetic field, the magnetic grid of the Earth.
Right.
Well, what they also realized is that that was a bacterial mutation that was happened millions of years ago. And since I've also learned from viral researchers that we as a mammalian species wouldn't even have be mammalians with in utero births or uteruses if we hadn't had a virus come in and mutate us in the evolutionary process. So this is where my thoughts flowed from that. One is the Creator created viruses and bacteria for a reason, maybe multiple reasons. They're composters, they're reducer species, they're detoxifiers, and now it appears that virus and bacteria are also mutators for adaptation and evolution. And we're running around and killing them. That doesn't make any sense to my mind. That's kind of saying that, oh, you caused me. Oh, the bacteria, the virus, you are causing all of this horrendous situation. No,
can't
go there. Yeah.
Codependence with bacteria and viruses is huge on the planet. And, of course, the thing we've had pounded into our heads for the sake of a buck is that all you need is a drug to heal you, to fix you. And, you know, what they're now telling us is that, and it's interesting, the people who studied these things, who developed the, you know, antibiotics, which means anti-life devices that kill these things off, tell us that by 2050, there will be more people dying from antibiotic-resistant bugs than from cancer today. And they have a solution. And their solution is, all we need is more money to develop stronger antibiotics.
Right.
And they think that the bug is the problem rather than the antibiotic is the problem.
Right. And so
now, Louis Pasteur... Louis Pasteur, you know, invented the penicillin, and back in that time, there was a huge controversy between the two and who was going to win. It was a man named Beauchamp, and Beauchamp, as a medical doctor, said, you know, the problem is not the bacteria or the virus or whatever The problem is the weakness in the terrain, the fact that, you know, we live without a proper power supply. We don't have love flowing through our cells. The fact that we eat the sad diet, the standard American diet that's filled with junk oils and garbage chemicals, and we destroy our terrain, our cellular structure. And when the cellular structure is weakened, then there are reducer organisms called bacteria, just like the lion in the jungle. The lion is a reducer organism. It doesn't go over after the big, tough, vital, healthy bull, elephant. It goes after the weak, straggling, dying. And that's exactly what the bacteria and the virus do. And what people don't realize is when they add an antibiotic, not that, you know, there's no place for them, because there is, but you've got to be really judicious in their use. But if they simply go in and, you know, time after time after time after time, assault the tissue structure with this toxic substance, then they simply contribute to the weak terrain, so one becomes more vulnerable to the invader, the cleanup crew, and now we've got these antibiotic-resistant superbugs.
Well, I think it goes even deeper than that for me. Is I thought Pasteur also developed vaccines. I thought he was the one that developed vaccines, and I could be wrong about that. And the thing is, we ask the wrong questions. Like, we not only put the blame on someone else or something else, but we ask the wrong questions, and they're more important than the answers. I've not had
absolutely
one person, right. I've not had one person ask me, what are you doing to protect the community and yourself? They don't ask that question. So anyway, on to something else. I have another thought. Hans Seely was brought up. I think you mentioned Hans Seely.
Sellier.
And yep. Sellier, thank you. I never knew how to pronounce yep. that. He came to the conclusion of altruistic self-interest, which I think I shared with you before. There's a whole URL that I can show you about an article written about his pursuit of a natural philosophy of life that would help a person.
Please drop me that.
Navigate.
Please drop me that link. I'd love to look at it.
Oh,
we
yeah.
do cover some of Sellier's work in our Laws of Living Intensive. His work
yeah,
on stress.
Great. He really helped me out, and that's where I ran into that altruistic self-interest, and that was the first time that I heard it's okay to love yourself as much as you love the other.
Well,
and
once again, we're going off on a rabbit trail that will destroy us, because love is not something we can do to ourselves
right.
or to another, but we can achieve the experience of ourselves as love. And so it's
yeah.
a whole different, you know, you got to ask the right questions. And
that's
so,
right. So we can be love towards ourselves as we are being
others.
Loved
yeah.
and others at the same
Precisely.
Time. And if either one is looted for the safety of the other, we do incredible violence.
Yeah, things get crazy for sure.
Yeah, they really do. But I wanted to share that with you. And also there is a yoga nidra, which is nidra yoga, which is what their bottom message is. I greet, welcome, and embrace whatever shows up in my life, for that is the messenger guiding me home to my true self.
Everything's planned for your highest good. Everything.
Right. So thank you, too, so much. I love what you share, Jeannie, and I love what's happening. The fast track, as the gentleman said yesterday, would you give me the fast track? I feel like all of a sudden I'm on it, and I haven't even tied my running shoes yet.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Okay. Well, blessings to you both.
All right. Anything else on your mind for today?
No, I'm glad that Jeannie's going to put, or that Jeannie has put your poem on the website, because I'm going to copy it, download it. That's wonderful.
Yeah, there's a link to it. You can download a printed copy. And we also have me reading it to music, so you can download the MP3 of it as well at that link.
Cool beans. And did I send you the article of the MP3 video about the gentleman who rescued so many children from Nazi Germany?
No, I haven't
did
seen
I?
It.
Okay, I'm going to send you that too. That is amazing.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, if you'd send me that URL.
Yeah, I will. I can send
Time
you the
for healing.
MP3 of it. Yep, it is.
Yay.
Yay.
Every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Let's go for it.
Let's go.
All right, young lady. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so we've got about 3 minutes left. So what's on your mind? We've got time for another conversation. And if you don't have a handout, Jeannie, we'll just say you missed the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing session that we did this Saturday, but we'll be doing another one the second Saturday of March and the Tuesday following that. So if you're interested in joining us for that, you can go to the website, whyagain.org, and you can look at the flyer. If you look at events there, you can look at the flyer. It's a one-year program that you can do just a single session, one still point session, which happens on a Saturday morning, the second Saturday of the month, and Tuesday evening. The second Tuesday we'll be doing that tonight with the group that joined us Saturday. But if you want to join us for that, you can sign up for one session or for a package of three sessions or for the whole year. And so if you're interested in that, check it out, or drop Jeannie an email at jeannie@whyagain.org. We'll include your phone number, and we'll get you set up for that. And we have now a 90-hour self-study course on the topic of codependence to interdependence and communication. So in that course, we include why is this happening to me again? We go into the forgiveness work, the forgiveness worksheet. We have the workshop Healing Through Relationships. Communication, did you hear what I think I said? That illustrates how to move out of projection communication into responsibility communication, and includes the codependence to interdependence, where we go in depth to the principle of the power person that we've identified several times on the show. There's a 20-page power person worksheet that we've developed that's really quite profound to work with, and the codependence worksheet as well. So that's all included in a self-study package that you can purchase. And it includes also a pre- and post-personal code evaluation, so that when you start in, you can know exactly what your hidden issues are, because of course the mind playing its game of hiding will tell itself all kinds of lies about where the problem is and never look where it really is. So the personal code evaluation is a set of questions that we ask that break your personal code down into 10 areas, so you get a chance to look at where's my most important work in terms of those 10 different areas. We'll give you three assignments. And so if you're interested in that course, there's also a post-evaluation, so that when you finish the course, you can look at exactly what improvements you had in your scores and where your next three challenges are. And so if you're interested in that, once again, if you have my number or Jeannie's, drop us a note, call us, or drop Jeannie an email, jeannie@whyagain.org. We appreciate you. Thanks for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. And blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.